filled volume. Instead, the entire structure was a densely packed honeycomb of much smaller enclosed spaces, squeezed together like components in an antique radio. I didn't think there was any hope of Rivage still being in the habitat. There were at least 3 departures to Chasm City per day, and I was fairly sure he'd have been on the first available flight down. Still, I stayed vigilant. Amelia's estimate had been unerringly accurate. The stoner funds I had brought with me would just cover my trip to Chasm City. I had already spent half on the Strelnikov. What remained was just enough to pay for the descent. True, I had harvested some money from Vadim, but when I examined the cash properly, it only amounted to about as much as the change left from my own funds. His victims, newcomers obviously, had not carried much local cash with them. I checked the time. Vadim's watch had concentric dials for both local 26-hour Yellowstone time and 24-hour system time. I had a couple of hours before my flight down. I planned to kill the time walking around NV, looking for local information sources, but I quickly found that large areas of the habitat were not accessible to anyone who had arrived via anything as lowly as the Strelnikov. People who had come in via high-burn shuttles were segregated from scum like us by armored glass walls. I found somewhere to sit down and drink a cup of bad coffee, the one universal commodity it seemed, and watched the 2 immiscible streams of humanity flow past. The place where I was sitting was a dingy thoroughfare, seats and tables jostling for space with meter-thick industrial pipes, which ran from floor to ceiling like hamadryad trees. Smaller pipes branched off the main arteries, curving through the air like rusty intestines. They throbbed unnervingly, as if titanic pressure were only just being contained by thin metal and crumbling rivets. Some effort had been made to gentrify the surroundings by weaving foliage around the pipes, but the attempt had been distinctly half-hearted. Not everyone shuffling through this area looked poor, but almost everyone looked as if they wished they were elsewhere. I recognized a few faces from the slowboat, and perhaps 1 or 2 from Hospital Idlewild, but I had certainly not seen the majority of the people before. I doubted that all of them were from beyond the Epsilon Eridani system. It was just as likely that NV was a gateway for in-system travelers. I even saw some Ultras, strutting around flaunting their chimeric modifications, but there were just as many on the other side of the glass. I remember dealing with their kind, Captain Orcagna's crew aboard the Orvieto, the woman with the hole in her gut who had been sent to meet us. Thinking of the way Rivage had known about our ambush, I wondered if, ultimately, we hadn't all been betrayed by Orcagna. Perhaps Orcagna had even arranged my revival amnesia to slow me down in my hunt. Or perhaps I was just being paranoid. Beyond the glass, I saw something even stranger than the black-clad cyborg wraiths who crewed the lighthuggers. Things like upright boxes, gliding with sinister grace amongst the crowds. The other people seemed oblivious to the boxes, almost unaware of them, except that they stepped carefully aside as the boxes moved amongst them. I sipped my coffee and noticed that some of the boxes had clumsy mechanical arms attached to their fronts, but most did not, and that almost all of the boxes had dark windows set into their fronts. "They're palanquins, I think." I sighed, recognizing the voice of Quillenbach, who was easing himself into the seat next to me. "Good. Finished your symphony yet?" He did a good job of pretending not to hear me. "I heard about them, those palanquins. The people inside them are called hermetics. They're the ones who've still got implants and don't want to get rid of them.